I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Yeah, all right, here we go.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's good morning, folks. It's Mark Maron here. It's How Are You, Geniuses, Philosopher Kings, Working Class Heroes, Progressive Utopians with No Sense of Humor, Lurking Conservatives. Good morning to you. How are you, my liberal rich friends who think that civil rights is how you treat your nanny and whether or not you actually take her to your doctor? Good to have you folks here. I'm back. Mark Riley is not here. I, of course, am Mark Maron. In the booth, we have Dan Pashman.
Yep.
John Boy Genius Crimmings, Little Goliath. We got Chris on the board.
Hey.
We got Trent. Everybody's here. Look at this. It's just me in the new studio. This is the first time I've ever gone solo in the new studio. I had a great time out in San Francisco. A lot of people came out to see me. They were fans too. There are still people out there in San Francisco, despite the fact that the quake in San Francisco refuses to carry us because it's just too much trouble to turn us around from 6 to 9. Instead, they put Springer on, who nobody likes out there. And to be honest with you, it's not clear how many people like him in the country. Really, I don't know how that's going to really pan out.
I'm the board out that show.
No, I know. I mean, I'm not. You know, he's a nice guy, but you know, what's he really saying exactly? At least I talk about my cat. Here's where it comes. Here's where the interesting thing comes. I do about an hour and a half show, hour and 15 minutes. Of course, I'm always paranoid when I do a performance out there in the world, certainly in San Francisco, that I'm not going to talk about politics enough, because I talk about it every day. I like to do my stand-up. But I did a little of both, and it was a Jewish community center. There's about 190-some-odd people there. And I do a little question and answer period. And I really was surprised, man, that there are still so many people that podcast our show out in San Francisco, very nice people. They were asking questions like, I do the show. They have me come back out on stage. I'm like, any questions? And some woman just goes, how are the cats? And there's been this cliffhanger for months about the well-being of my cats. Someone else asked, where's Pendejo? So I had to tell them that Tom got, you know, laid off.
Tom actually was here on Friday, Mark. You missed him, but he stopped by to say hello.
Oh, yeah?
So hopefully there's still an outside chance we'll have some occasional guest appearances from
Mark. Yeah, well, that'd be nice. You know, we missed Tom, and someone asked about my contract, told him I didn't know what was happening. Hopefully we'll know, by the end of the week. I will tell you out there that our ratings are looking well for Morning Sedition. We did an amazing thing. We've gotten more of you to listen longer to us, and we appreciate that. I hope it's not a charity thing and just because you find us interesting. In fact, wait, let's help the poor guy.
Pitiless.
Yeah, well, here's the weirdest thing. I get off stage in San Francisco, and I'm walking out, and there's people waiting to say hi to me, and one woman just walks up to me and goes, did you sleep in those pants? What the hell kind of thing is that to say to a guy after he just puts an hour and a half of his life out there? He answers some questions, you know, opens his heart up. Did you sleep in those pants? And I really had that moment where I'm like, I like these pants. I think these pants are fine. And she felt bad.
Did she want the pants?
No, but she ended up like, because, you know me, if I'm open and somebody says something mean, I'll, start to crumple. And she saw that, and then she, to make me feel better, she goes, no, I'm sorry. You did a very good job, Mr. Moran. yeah, but I do love San Francisco. And I will say this. I've got a scoop for you people. I was at the airport leaving New York City to fly to the Bay Area, and I saw Senator Dick Gephardt. And
Congressman.
Congressman Dick Gephardt. And I couldn't help myself but to ask him. You know, it was one of those moments where I'm like, do I say something? And then, the reporter in me kicked in.
Right, yeah.
So I got a scoop.
What does that feel like?
I got a scoop for you people. Dick Gephardt not running in 2008.
Holy
all right?
crap.
Yeah. Somebody write that down.
I'm going to get on the horn here, Aaron.
Maybe you should talk to the publicist at work, the press, call the Daily News. Dick Gephardt not running in 2008. And I asked him if he knew who. And he basically says, no, been there and done that. Yeah, a couple of times, I guess. He felt kind of beaten, but I asked him.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I asked him who he thought it would be, and he thinks it's going to be maybe Hillary is going to be the one to beat. And we don't need to talk about that for another 2 years. So let's let's move into some real news. Do I have anything else I want to tell you before I go into things that are important? I saw March of the Penguins on the plane.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
Well, you know, I thought it was good. It's about penguins. I found it I found it very moving and interesting. It was one of those movies where you just watch it and you think to yourself, wow, there is some sort of strange order and plan to the world that I have no idea how it works.
You mean some sort of an intelligent design?
Absolutely, man. Hey, it's just a theory. And they, how does evolution explain that, the penguins walking 70 miles three times to have kids and then to pass them off to the male to take care of them, and some of them die and get eaten by seals? I mean, that's God. There's no doubt about that.
You know, conservatives did try to co-opt that movie and say that it was evidence of intelligent design and conservative principles and monogamy. And
no, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's just, I think it is absolutely evolution. It's just one of those quirky, weird patterns that seems to have taken on a life of its own. But I found it very touching. And I think the way it was shot and, you know, that they're monogamous and that they commit themselves to their kids and they're penguins. So they're funny and cute. All right. So let's talk about the hurricane for a minute. Hurricane Wilma has begun pounding Southwest Florida. Mom, are you okay? Mom, call me. With maximum sustained winds of 125 miles per hour still offshore, Wilma is now a Category 3 hurricane centered southwest of Naples, Florida, and moving northeast at about 20 miles per hour with no signs of weakening, my friends. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Florida. I'm sorry. More than 22,000 people are in shelters across the state, but in the low-lying Florida Keys, not even 10% of the Keys, 78,000 residents have evacuated. Dig that. And, you know, it's funny. I saw the guys, the mayor from down there from Key West, I believe, just saying, look, we're still going to have the festival next week. You know, so just hang out. I mean, we'll get through this. Now, let's talk about Scooter Libya a little bit. I think we should. But first, I want to maybe get a little more of that schadenfreude going, because now that I know that it is the right word and that it's okay for me to have it, with the possibility of multiple indictments raining down on his inner circle, anti-war sentiment in the country, Katrina response, bad poll numbers, and the sad milestone of the 2,000th soldier being killed in Iraq quickly approaching, Bush apparently is frustrated, angry, and bitter, according to some people who know him. And I say, good. Let's keep hitting them. Let's keep punching them in the chest. That's what I say. The fact that Bush may lose his symbiotic twin and brain, Karl Rove, has gotten the president all squirrely, folks. Advisors and friends say that Bush is basically emotionally all over the place. Sometimes he's cheerful and serene. Other times he's just peevish and melancholy. Sometimes he's spewing blame, running around yelling about, you know, Rove and Card and Cheney and snapping at staffers. You know, apparently he's changing everyone's nickname to sounds like someone needs a meeting. That's what I say. And dare I say, I think he's acting a little Nixon-y, isn't he? Doesn't that sound a little Nixon-y?
It's true, Mark. And this is a piece that's in today's New York Daily News that you're referring to. And I thought it was interesting and great at the same time. And my schadenfreude is kicking in as well. One of the things most interesting is they said that Bush is snapping at Dick Cheney, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. Well, this is a weird thing. The fact that Bush has so far escaped blame in this thing, you know, maybe because he is either, you know, brilliantly insulated by this machine that he's in, or it shows that he clearly was completely out of control of his inner sanctum, who are bending over backwards now to protect Cheney. I think this is an important thing to realize, because it's always been an assumption on behalf of most people, certainly, you know, on the left, that Dick Cheney is running the country. Even on the right, I think that some of those people find solace in the fact that Dick Cheney is running the country. But I think what we're finding here in how this is unfolding in response to these indictments is that everybody is talking about protecting Dick Cheney. Scooter Libby is protecting Dick Cheney. All of these indictments are going to come down on Dick Cheney's office. And this idea that Bush is insulated from this, or that there's any effort going into insulating Bush, might be a lie. I think Bush might have actually not known what the hell these guys were up to, and that's why there's indications that he is pissed off at them. The fact that George W. Bush is running around blaming Andy Card, you know, or his chief of staff, or Karl Rove, or any of the, or Cheney even, that can only mean one thing, is that you guys screwed me. You guys screwed me. You didn't keep me in the loop on this, you know, which may benefit him in the long run. But now he looks like even a bigger ass, and he's strange, you know, strutting, swaggering, swashbuckling political male romance of jealousy and anger, and it brought him down, thankfully. And we're going to talk a little bit about him. We're going to talk a little bit about Patrick Fitzgerald, federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald's new website. And also we're going to talk about, you know, what he was allowed to do with this grand jury, because I think there's some arguments as people on the left that you can win with this thing. You know, there's a lot of criticism coming from the right that is completely unfounded and very simple to argue. And I'll give you some hints on how to do that. It's 16 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here. Mark Reilly is out of town. It's morning sedition here on Air America Radio. It's Monday. Feeling okay considering, you know, I've been flying back and forth all over the place, out to San Francisco. You know, some of the affiliates out there at the Quake, it was interesting. I'm not going to mention any names, but there was an operative, a Quake operative who I talked to undercover who said that everywhere she goes in the van that says Quake on it, people go, "What happened to morning sedition?" Yeah, good choice putting the Springer show in there. Anyways, why not turn us around? You know, that's the most frustrating thing about the radio business. And I'm not jealous or envious, but, you know, we got people that love our show out there, and we want to do this show for them. And I wish we had that opportunity, but we have no control over how affiliates do their business. Hey, look, listen, the White House is strapping in. They're trying to figure out how they're going to respond to these indictments, and there will be indictments, my friends. We don't know how many indictments. We don't know what the indictments are for, but the federal prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, has a menu of indictments planned. There's evidence of that because he has created a website for himself to post things, to answer questions. We're going to have a link to the website on morningsedition.com.
It's up there now, Mark, on the links page.
You can check out what he's got over there. Basically, he's launched a website. It's not a fan site, and the timing is a little odd, and I think the timing is encouraging because it does mean that he's getting ready to put some indictments up there, perhaps. It certainly doesn't suggest that he's saying, well, we got nothing. That's why we put the website up. No, clearly, he's got things he wants to put up there. Fitzgerald's spokesperson said, don't get too excited. He basically said it's a way to address the never-ending flow of some questions people have about the Plame case. He said it's pretty bare bones, and they have some document formatting issues they're still dealing with, but it's getting there. If you were to speculate that what the questions were specifically addressing on the site, judging by the documents there, they would revolve around what power the prosecutor has and what power he has to do what, essentially. And there's more evidence that this is something the right is going to hit, by the way. In terms of the indictments, they are going to take some shots at Fitzgerald and what his authority was. But I will tell you this. Just a few weeks after Patrick Fitzgerald took over the investigation of the CIA leak case, he got authority from the Justice Department to expand his inquiry to include any criminal attempts to interfere with his probe. This information came out in a letter from Deputy Attorney General James B. Comey that you can see on Fitzgerald's new website, actually. And basically that means that despite the fact that he was investigating a leak, it's important to know that what they did was reveal the identity of a covert CIA operative. They compromised national security as a reprisal against someone who criticized their administration with intelligence showing that they were lying to the American people about why they were going to Iraq. Now, basically what this is saying about the federal prosecutor's power is that he is also able to prosecute in terms of if they try to cover up, if there's perjury. He's basically got the freedom to prosecute any crime that comes out revolving around this leak case, which we're assuming there might be some. It seems like there's going to be some perjury. There was clearly a cover-up. I imagine that conspiracy as a charge is not pertaining directly to what he was set out to investigate, but he's got the freedom to investigate anything he wants revolving around this.
It's important to note, you know, that one of the things that Republicans were saying in the past couple of weeks was that this guy was overstepping his bounds, that he did not have the right to investigate these other crimes.
Well, I was going to get to that, but thank you, Dan. I'm on top of it. The Republicans are testing ways to spin the leak indictments. The White House is intending to pursue a strategy of attacking any criminal charges that are handed down by federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald. They are going to, and look out for this because this is going to happen, they are going to accuse Fitzgerald as being overzealous, which they're going to try and push him to left of things. They're going to probably characterize him as somebody, if not, you know, leaning left or being sympathetic to the Democrats, as somebody that just is an out-of-control egomaniac. And certainly they are responsible. They are guilty of being that, but I don't think that they can accuse him of being that because he is just doing his job, and there's nothing wrong with being ambitious and being meticulous in doing that job. They will say that the crimes are minimal and just politics or strategy. This, of course, is something we've seen already. This is the criminalization of politics frame that has become very popular. They will try to minimize and dismiss these indictments or these charges. The big one is that he couldn't indict on a crime, so he indicted on not having a crime to indict. And that is a spin. All right. The bottom line is a crime is a crime. Even if they successfully were able to chaotically, you know, make this seem like nothing happened. If there is perjury, if there is a criminal conspiracy, they should be indicted for it. You know, whether they think it's politics or not, it's a crime. And the bottom line is, if you are arguing with somebody who is someone from the right, and they give you that bit of business that Fitzgerald was supposed to be investigating the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, that it was specific, the bottom line is Fitzgerald's investigation didn't actually have any limitation in that way. In this letter from Assistant Attorney General from the Justice Department, from James B. Comey, Deputy Attorney General, it is very clear that he says, quote, I hereby delegate to you all the authority of the Attorney General with respect to the Department's investigation into the alleged unauthorized disclosure of a CIA employee's identity, end quote. So if someone's arguing along those lines, give them that. And if they give you the other thing is, if these idiots start with this criminalization of politics thing, you know, you got to make sure that you know, that they understand, you know, what we're talking about here. We're talking about a concerted effort. The bottom line is that Cheney and his neocon cohorts put the White House Iraq group together to dupe the American people with skewed intelligence into going into a war that was based on lies and has made the world a more dangerous place and killed almost 2,000 American soldiers and thousands of Iraqi civilians. The crime is compromising national security by leaking the name of a covert agent as a reprisal against someone exposing the lies that they were trying to sell the American people to go into a war that was certainly unnecessary. Now, that is the bottom line. The bottom line is that these guys will do anything to fulfill this neocon agenda, and they will still do it. Believe me, they still think that everything is okay. They're not looking at now. They're not looking at our domestic issues now. They're looking at the long haul, and the neocons believe they're right on schedule. We're going to get into that in just a second. We're going to talk a little bit about Condoleezza Rice and about Jack Straw, her, I guess the one who does her job in Britain, running around the country saying that they're not going to attack Iran, and Tony Blair saying that they might. They're using the old neocon trick of confusing, duping. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is out for the day. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Monday, people. Later in the show, hopefully we're going to have Larissa Alexandrova on again. She's managing editor over at rawstory.com to give us the latest on the leak investigation, because apparently she gets leaked the leak investigation. There's that give her the leak stuff. They give her the good dirt. She is down in Florida, though, and we don't know if we'll be able to contact her because Hurricane Wilma has begun pounding Southwest Florida with maximum sustained winds of 125 miles per hour. It's still offshore. Those winds are. Wilma is now a Category 3 hurricane centered southwest of Naples and moving northeast at about 20 miles per hour with no signs of weakening. So is that how that works? So the actual hurricane itself is moving at 20 miles an hour, but the winds are swirling. So it's a swirling situation. They're swirling around that eye of the storm, but the entire bulk of it is moving 20 miles per hour, where the winds in the middle are swirling around at 125 miles an hour. It's scary. More than 22,000 people are in shelters across the state. In the Florida Keys, 78,000 residents have evacuated. So hopefully we'll still get Larissa on the phone. Listen, Mr. Selfish, I really want to know more about the leak investigation. So I hope Larissa, after she's boarded up her windows, I hope she gets a cell signal in her basement to call us. David Poland, our editor, our movie guy, editor of Movie City News. If you're going to leave those mics open, try not to hawk things up. Who did that? Was that little Goliath?
That was Goliath.
Sorry.
And wow, man. Wow, dude. What do you think? You're still in bed? All right. Anyways,
he does that all the time.
He does.
I can't stand that.
Chris, we're going to talk about your new toy in a second because you've got problems, man.
Problems.
You just got the magic bullet.
Yeah.
And you fell for it? What?
I got 99 problems, but the magic bullet is not one of them.
You love the magic bullet.
Love it.
Look, everything is all mushy.
Dude,
it's perfect.
It's the best invention ever.
Wait, is this red mush? Is that salsa? Or is the pink mush the margarita, or is that the salsa?
No.
Right.
Dude, you can actually put the chips and the salsa into the magic bullet and then drink it.
So, yeah, that's great. So you're basically telling me that it enables you not to chew.
Yeah.
You can just pour any food into your throat without chewing. It's perfect for people that have no teeth. All right, wait. Musician Martha Wainwright's going to be here later. I saw her years ago perform with her brother Rufus Wainwright at an event, and I sort of really became enamored with her voice. And when I saw that she had a new record out, I was excited to have her on. Sometimes when you read the headlines, interesting segue. I've got to breathe. That's what Pashman said. Breathe. That's why my mother says that, and both of my wives have said that. I'm a breath holder. Some people do that. I don't know why I do it, but I do it. I don't breathe properly, and I will hold my breath sometimes just for no reason. Have you ever just been caught sitting there like, and people are like, what are you doing? I don't know. I'm holding my breath. I'm frightened. I don't know. Hey, Goliath, what did you do this weekend there, genius? What happened, man? What did you take your time? Think about it.
I had a fairly low-key weekend.
Really?
I would not have picked that at all.
I hung out with my parents.
Whoa.
Well, that's not exactly low-key, I guess.
I think Pashman did, too. You went to the game, I'm sure, with the entire Pashman clan.
No, they were off elsewhere. This was all friends.
Wow, how'd that feel? Was that sad for you? Were you holding your breath with your friends going, where's my mommy?
I mean, I called during the timeouts and stuff. Just to check in.
I'm okay, and we're winning. Yeah. Thanks for the cookies.
Yeah.
All right. Sometimes. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Wow, that was really loud in my head. When's he coming back? When's Brendan P.W. McDonald, who is going to be officially married and relaxed, coming back?
Dude, you know what I realized over the weekend is he went on his honeymoon to Mexico. I hope he's okay with the hurricane and stuff.
Well, didn't he come back? I thought he was back. Wasn't he back?
I think he gets back tonight.
Wasn't he on the other side, though?
I think so. So he should be okay. Hopefully it didn't ruin his honeymoon.
Yeah, but you know, you would think that Brendan, even if he was on his honeymoon, was experiencing something newsworthy, would have given us a buzz here at the studio, wouldn't you?
Nothing.
I don't know if he's coming back, man.
God bless the guy for having good boundaries and being, you know what I mean? That dude is like, you know, he's a compact model. You know what I mean? He's not going to let on anything. When he says, I'm not thinking about the show, he's not thinking about the show. Even when I'm on vacation, I'm like, oh, no, there's the daily briefing. There's all our stories. There's the things we might talk about today, and I'm not part of it. I got to read it. All right, from the Associated Press, White House defense shaky in CIA leak case. White House defense shaky in CIA leak case. Translation, Scooter begs president to add Fitzgerald to Axis of Evil. All right. From the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Is that a paper? From the Santa Fe, New Mexican, Venezuela's Chavez.
Just like
guys. Hey, dude, you know, I heard that. All right. I grew up in New Mexico. Dude, let me tell you, man. Venezuela, Chavez is... Okay. Venezuela's Chavez warns of high U.S. oil prices if U.S. invades this country. Yeah. Venezuela's Chavez warns of high U.S. oil prices if U.S. invades this country. Translation, president prepares to invade Venezuela. Venezuela orders troops to Africa. Oh, man, that's sort of a stupid Bush joke. All right, from ABC News, millionaire senator wins $850K in lottery. Let's try that. Millionaire senator wins $850K in lottery. Translation, millionaire senator accepts bribe from lottery lobbyists.
Hey, man, Venezuela Chavez is going to, he says he's going to jack up the oil prices, I say, if the U.S. invades his country, man. Hey, Dave's not here, man. No, it's me, Dave.
We tried to get Cheech Marin on the show, and I really, yeah. All right, man. We tried to get Cheech Marin on the show, and I really wanted him to do Dave's Not Here with Little Goliath. How good would that be? No, it's Dave, man. Let me in. Dave's not here. Oh, this is going back to my childhood. Now we have things to talk about. I know I had a plan. I had a plan going into it. Part of the neocon death cult vision, as some of you know, is to restructure through violent means the entire Middle East. That would include Iraq, Syria, Iran. They always wanted to start with Iraq. Going back to 1995, you got guys like Scooter Libby, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, all the, you know, Douglas Feith, all the guys that were, you know, kind of, you know, took over the inner sanctums over there at the White House to, you know, kind of unfold this agenda. Now, here's what's happening now. In response to the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri at the hands of what turns out to be high-level operatives within the Syrian government, President Bush and Condoleezza Rice have asked the UN Security Council to take urgent action. Now that the facts are in, what does that action look like? Now, the facts are essentially that this was an inside job. This guy, Rafik Hariri, was the former prime minister of Lebanon. He was very popular in Lebanon. He was a millionaire. He was responsible for rebuilding Beirut. He was well-liked in Lebanon. Now, the guy that Assad... in Syria, wanted to continue to run Lebanon, was somebody sympathetic to the Syrian domination of Lebanon. So they passed an amendment that would enable this guy to continue ruling. And people got pissed, and Hariri got outspoken. And basically, within Syria, they created this very complex plan to kill Hariri and blame it on a suicide bomber. They even created a fake suicide bomber. They had a guy make a suicide bomber tape, and I assume that they killed him, because that guy's missing. And they set this guy up, and they killed him. Now, what I want, a couple of things that really hit me when I was looking at this story was, like, if these guys are doing this, you know, we've certainly done things like this. This reeked of one of those inside CIA jobs. They might have even trained with ex-CIA officials. Who knows? That's the dark history, the covert history. Those are the things that we never can really report on because we don't know for sure. We can only speculate. But what does it mean for someone to take action like this? When Rice and Bush say that they want the UN to take action, and if diplomatic means don't work, that they are going to take action. Now, given that, according to Condoleezza Rice, we know there is already engagement with Syria on the border of Iraq. You know, there is engagement between Syrians and American forces in Iraq. All right. She also said that all options are on the table. They always say that we're not going to do anything, but all options are on the table. Now, what does that mean when you're talking about George Bush? Military deployment, but that would seem impossible given that there are troops, our troops are overextended now. Bombing by the U.S. or Israel. Some people think that this might be subcontracted out to Israel. Or nuclear action. Now, this is something we assume just won't happen. You know, this is something that in the modern world we don't want to happen. We assume it won't happen. But I'll tell you something. If there's any president that is capable of doing some sort of low-level nuclear attack, if there be such a thing, it is this president. Certainly this president, cornered as he is now, could do this. And then the frightening thing about this administration is that they are not above taking extreme measures to distract from domestic problems. I mean, Frank Rich speculated in a piece in the New York Times on Sunday that the reason why Libby and Rove, you know, began to operate together was because at the time that Libby and the White House Iraq group were pushing for this propaganda motion to really dupe the American people into believing that Iraq was affiliated with terrorists and had weapons of mass destruction, Karl Rove was starting to realize that domestically, because we were not able to catch bin Laden and Afghanistan had been over for a little while and there had been some success there, that the population of the United States was starting to drift on the fact that the Republicans were the National Security Party and this administration was going to protect this country. So it coincided with domestic need to refrighten the populace into believing that this was the strong suit of the Bush administration. So given that, if these indictments come down the next couple of days, you know, who's to say that some horrendous military event couldn't be unleashed on Syria? It would seem an impossibility to me to sell the American people on the justification for putting more U.S. soldiers' lives at stake as a reprisal for an assassination in Lebanon. So it would probably be more massive and quick and just bang, you know, just because it was a distraction. I mean, I heard rumors. They probably weren't rumors. Someone told me, who was it? Cindy Sheehan said that Cy Hirsch had said in a statement that Cy Hirsch, a reporter from the New York Times, very respected, from the New Yorker primarily, not the New York Times, the New Yorker, said that during the Katrina response, during the debacle that was on television for days about how this administration dropped the ball and was completely incompetent in response to that hurricane, that there were massive bombing attacks on Iraq. While we were all sitting there going, look at the problems in this country, they were obliterating people in Iraq with massive bombing attacks. So for them to do this, this is what I'm saying, is when the indictments come down, the frightening thing is that some extreme military action could take place either against Syria or either against Iran, which they say they're not going to do, but all options are on the table. Always. All options are on the table. So when we continue this conversation in a minute, we'll talk a little bit about Iran, because they seem to be doing something that the neocon death cult does here a lot, is that you have Jack Straw, who is the Minister of Defense, who is basically does
the British Foreign Secretary.
British Foreign Secretary is running around with Condoleezza Rice saying, "Oh no, we're not going to do anything in Iran. We're waiting for a diplomatic means to sort of square that off, to have a discussion about nuclear proliferation." While meanwhile, Tony Blair is back in England, basically gearing the public up for some sort of military action. That is something that the confusion of statements and the confusion of message is something the neocon death cults does a lot, because what it does is it throws people off and they don't know who's saying what, and eventually they just say, "I don't know. What? Let them go ahead. Just do. Just do it. Just." 46 past the hour. We'll be back in a second to talk about that. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. I'm Mark Maron. Good morning.
Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Oh, Franken, King of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
What is that? It's 51 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is in transit today from the Deep South, I believe. He was attending a wedding. He'll be back tomorrow. Is that the Rockford Files?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah,
James Gardner and the Rockford Files? What?
Trent plays the weirdest music.
So Trent, if people don't know, we'll introduce you to a new member of the cast. He is obviously somebody who's funny because he's playing the Rockford Files.
Oh, Trent, thanks, guys.
Yeah, Trent is going to be replacing Kalo while Kalo goes to figure out, who he is and why he's alive in Seattle.
For a week. And by the way, I got like 50 emails about people like, "Hey, man, you're leaving? I'm sorry to hear that."
Yeah, they're scared, and they should be scared, given that we don't know what happens here sometimes. But you're not leaving, and hopefully I'm not leaving, and Trent will be here for a week, so we'll just have to put up with TV theme songs occasionally.
Right.
I understand that. That's funny stuff. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Watch out for the Knight Rider.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be able to identify that one. I don't think I've ever even watched that show. I am amazed at how little TV I watch. Where the hell do people get the time, man? Where do people get the time to blog, to load their iPod, to read every paper, to watch television? I mean, I just don't have a handle on this whole TiVo, record, maybe do things later.
Well, what fills up your day?
Dude, I think, what do you mean what fills up my day? I come here, I work, I read the things that I need to read to know what I'm talking about here. Then I go home and I go, "Oh my God, I'm going to kill myself."
Yes,
and
then we substitute the kill myself thing with, television.
Oh, so you're living a lie.
Yeah.
You see, if you were to be honest with yourself and reflect for a few minutes on where you really are and how tired you are and everything else, but I'm going to start I started TiVoing Curb Your Enthusiasm because I think it's important that I watch it. He's gotten a little Jewy. It's interesting. It's a little more Jewy than it used to be. I don't know why that is.
That show got more Jewy?
Yes, yes. I don't know if it was.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I think it was a conscious decision.
Right, Seinfeld was borderline too Jewy for my taste.
No, but it's weird. I didn't notice it the first season, and I don't watch it that much because I have a hard time not resenting anybody doing anything funny besides me. But right now, I could have been in Los Angeles doing a guest spot on my buddy's show, Lucky Louis C.K., but I chose to stay here and fight the fight.
Thanks,
to live
man.
The struggle with the people, to hang out with the fellas. Kent Jones is back. He was on vacation. Nice to see you, Ken. All right, so let me do this really quickly because I sort of talked about it briefly. I just wanted to say that what is happening on behalf of Tony Blair and Jack Straw in Britain in relation to Iran is that there was all this talk about diplomatic means to negotiating something around these nuclear proliferation talks, and now what's happening is Blair is starting to try to froth up the British people into believing it's okay to take some military action. Now, what became clear to me about this is that Tony Blair and George W. Bush are allies forever. Britain and the United States are allied forever in supporting the neocon agenda, which transcends anything that has to do with domestic politics in this country. These people, if Brent Stokroft, who was the national security advisor for George Bush at first, and people like Larry Wilkinson, former Powell chief of staff, Colin Powell's chief of staff, have talked about this cabal, this Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, neocon death cult cabal within the White House, within the government here that has hijacked foreign policy. These guys are not going to stop. They are not going to stop. They don't care who's president. This is something they believe in. And Scooter Libby was an operative of this. And Brent Stokroft even said that, Dick Cheney didn't used to be like this. What did these guys do to him? This is an interesting conversation that we're going to be continually having around the fact that Condoleezza Rice, Rumsfeld, people like Dick Cheney, these neocon hardcore believers really just see whatever's happening, indictments or anything that happens domestically, anything that goes wrong in Iraq, is it's just being, you know, basically speed bumps, man. They got a long-term vision of this thing, and they think that, you know, stuffing democracy down the throats of the Middle East with guns, explosions, knives, violence is really going to work, whereas from all indication, it just creates more terrorism. Now let's move into the domestic front a little bit here, because DeLay, he's in court on Friday, all right? This guy, you know, he picked a mugshot photographer. He went shopping for sheriff's departments to find a mugshot photographer that would make him look good, that had a hair and makeup person. Did you see the mugshot? Here we were expecting, I don't know what we were expecting. I think that somewhere in our hearts we really wanted sort of a frazzled, disheveled, drunk.
James Brown.
Yeah, but, you know, those guys, the reason they were arrested is because they were out of control. Right. You know, I mean, DeLay had plenty of time to prepare, but I still think that to see him smiling, to use an indictment as an opportunity to get a new headshot is crazy. I mean, to see that guy with that smug, weird smile would make me think, like, he's really nuts. At least he should look a little troubled. He's under arrest. All right.
I think Saturday Night Live said it best when they said that the photo was taken while he was drowning baby kittens.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty good. But thanks for you know. No, I mean, I like the baby kitten thing. You know, now it seems, but part of me is sort of like, yeah, I could have been on Saturday Night Live. You know, I was there. All right. Years ago, I had a shot at that, man. You know, I interviewed with Norm Michaels, and he said, I like to look into people's eyes. You can tell a lot by their eyes. And I got creeped out. All right, here we go. But here, Tom DeLay appeared in court on Friday. His attorney had done some devious homework. This is interesting, and I'm sure most of you know this, but for those of you who don't, DeLay's attorney asked State District Judge Bob Perkins to recuse himself. Okay, to recuse himself after it was revealed that he gave money to MoveOn.org during the presidential election in support of John Kerry. What the hell difference does that make? These guys will call judicial activism on anybody but their own. The fact, you know, the guy's a judge. What the hell difference does it make? Does he have the right to just say, I want a new judge? Well, Judge Perkins, being a good sport, didn't flinch, and he said, well, fine, I'll have a Republican judge check it out, and we'll see what he thinks. But I hope he's back, and I hope he gets over to judge on that, on those indictments. It's 57 past. We'll be back with the new news on the leak case and new Wilma news, a lot of stuff. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. Morning geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, how are you? Threw the scream in there because I didn't throw it in earlier. Usually I do this one there.
Blah, 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 blah,
but
blah.
See, I decided to mix it up a little bit, and I went with the...
Spencer and I were just talking about
that. Were you? Did you get hung up on that a little bit?
We were laughing because Patrick said, you know, that's probably exactly what's going on in his mind right now.
And that's exactly what's going on in my mind. I'm evening things up. You know why Dan Pashman knew that? Because he, like me, is obsessive compulsive and has problems, yet is not willing to admit that. See, I have am on top of my obsessive compulsion. I don't have it as bad as Dan Pashman, who is extremely obsessive compulsive.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with wanting to have clean hands, Mark.
Yeah. You better go wash them, because you did. Remember, you
what,
touched the thing.
It dirty?
Yeah, you touched that thing in here.
All right, I'll be right back.
Okay, good. Thank God we got rid of them. I'm just tired of looking them in there with the antibacterial stuff, and you know, it's weird. Anyways, look, I'm going to talk about the top news in a second. I'll give you some Wilma information. I got a little tidbit of DeLay information that I find very engaging. I want to talk to you a little bit about the man that is Scooter Libby and how obsessed he got with Joe Wilson, to the point where it was one of those, it was almost a love thing, a love, respect, jealousy, weird hate kind of male bonding thing gone wrong. Not that they were friends, but you know how it is when you lock on to somebody and for whatever reason they just put it way up your, you know what I mean? You just hate them. And this was one of those things where a guy like Scooter Libby, who was generally apparently meticulous and well-organized and not somebody who would fall into a personalizing an issue, became, I think, completely obsessed with Ambassador Joe Wilson, not just for ruining their little game to lie to the American people effectively, but because there was something about him. But here, first, we know things are tough in the job market right now, so we've decided to help out. According to recently published reports, North Korea, under the leadership of major film buff Kim Jong-il, is seeking to open its film industry to partnerships with foreign filmmakers. We scanned through the Sunday Help Wanted listings and found this for our Morning's Edition Monday job listing. Okay, needed. Most Excellent Cinema Directors. The kingdom of joyous, happy people under the benevolent one seeks skillful film directors anxious to sing the praises of the glorious Son of Heaven. The earthly paradise of North Korea needs artists able to make every imaginable genre of film, from mystery, as in The Mystery of Why the Dear Leader is So Resplendent, to Western, as in The Western World Will Quake Before the Power of Exalted Kim Jong-il. If you are reading this, in the name of God, please help me. I was working in the publicity office at Universal when I was kidnapped by North Korean agents and shipped to Pyongyang in a box of what I think were reactor parts. I am being held in a locked room and forced to write adjective-heavy odes of praise to a twisted dwarf. They beat me brutally every time I run out of synonyms for illustrious. I am given nothing to eat but rice and a greasy meat that I suspect is Yorkshire Terrier. If they approve my work, I am given time with a Japanese girl they also abducted, but I haven't seen her in weeks, and God forgive me, but the meat is starting to taste human. Merciful Jesus, help me. Qualified applicants should contact the North Korean consulate or simply wait to be nabbed off the streets. There you go. How do you like that? How do you like them apples? Now look at this. I just talked about delay, and most of you guys know on Friday that he said the judge, he wants a different judge. He wants a Republican judge. And I didn't realize that you can just say that. Hopefully this judge, being a good sport, this judge Bob Perkins of the district court there in Texas said, well, look, I'll have a Republican judge, check me out. And I hope he gets to oversee the case. But here's the thing that amazes me, the arrogance of this bastard, the arrogance of Tom DeLay, the arrogance of a guy who was accused of money laundering and taking corporate contributions. DeLay's staff disclosed that he flew to Houston on Thursday morning last week on a corporate jet owned by R.J. Reynolds, a longtime contributor. You know, it's just the hubris of that, just him saying, you know, screw you. Look at this. I'm doing it again. I just, you know, I want nothing more than to him to be leveled to tears somehow. Is that wrong? Is that wrong of me? I don't think so.
No, it's quite right of you, in fact, Mark.
They said that the jet was used in compliance with regulations, but man, it's just the arrogance is mind-bending. It really is. In Reynolds, you know, that's R.J. Reynolds. You know, I've got my own thing with cigarettes. Man, I've been wanting a cigarette lately. All right, Hurricane Wilma. Made landfall at 6:30 a.m. Eastern Time this morning near Cape Romano, Florida, 22 miles south of Naples. The Category 3 storm brought 125 mile-per-hour winds and a storm surge potentially as high as 19 feet. More than 22,000 people are in shelters across the state, but not as many left in the Keys. You know, well, not even 10% of the Keys residents evacuated. They're like, we'll hang, we'll do it, we're boarded up, we're in, we got a keg. I love the Keys. I was there once, and I realized this is where people come at the end of their rope. It's unbelievable down there. The fast-moving hurricane is expected to slice northeast across the state at up to 25 miles per hour. Is that just 25 miles an hour or 125 miles an hour?
No, the storm itself is moving.
We discussed this earlier. The right. Widening gyre, or the swirling hurricane itself, is moving at 25 miles per hour, but the winds within the eye are up to 125 miles per hour. It's going to hit the Atlantic coast. It's likely to get winds nearly as strong as those hitting the Gulf Coast. There you go. Mom, let me know that you're okay. Dick Cheney's chief of staff and prime suspect in the plane leak investigation was obsessed, folks, with former Ambassador Joe Wilson and consumed with taking him down. Apparently, after Wilson went public with his findings in Niger, that there were now plans on behalf of Iraq to acquire nuclear materials. Basically, what I'm saying is that when he came back and said that the plans for Iraq to acquire nuclear materials from Niger was bunk, Scooter Libby just went nuts. Wilson's criticism of the neocon death cult pre-war propaganda was the beginning of the unraveling of everything the White House group, the White House Iraq group, has sought to do. Basically, Wilson came back and stuck a thorn in their side of truth that was the first unraveling of what was a series of lies that they sent American soldiers to war on. Now, apparently, Libby wanted to discredit Wilson so intensely that he had to be talked down. All right. His obsession with Wilson lasted well into 2003, after the investigation into the leaks had already begun. Now, to people who know him, like his mentor, Paul Wolfowitz, who said that Libby was always been excruciatingly careful. William Kristol, the conservative columnist, said that Libby is someone who would seem to be to spend a lot of effort at not getting caught up in something like this. Well, he did. He was completely obsessed. And I think it has something to do with the fact that Libby is a swaggering guy. He's a very intelligent guy. He prides himself on his proximity to the most powerful person in the world, Dick Cheney. He's running part of Cheney's Cheney's brain. He is a power freak himself. Joe Wilson is also a swaggering politico who really called him and really put it to him. And I think that Scooter Libby, thank God, because it's what's making him so indictable right now, became completely obsessed with taking Joe Wilson down. Now, Scooter Libby, if you want to know exactly what he did, he used the vice president's office to monitor all of Joe Wilson's television appearances and press interviews, including college newspapers, going back to 2003, which probably means he listened to our show a couple of times because we had Wilson on, like, what, three times, Dan? How many times we had Wilson on?
At least three times.
So that means Scooter Libby probably listened to our show if he was just completely obsessed with Scooter Libby. I just want to, with Wilson, I want to say to Scooter, thank you for listening. He took issue with a statement Wilson made in a University of Iowa newspaper calling Cheney a lying son of a bitch, and that just freaked him out. After the Wilson book, The Politics of Truth, came out, Libby became more obsessed and ordered a dossier of information that could be bent into an argument against Wilson's claims because he wanted to take it public. And this was in 2004. No one else would go near taking on Wilson by that point because it would have given him too much of a platform. Scooter Libby pressed the administration to publicly argue Wilson, while others in the administration, like Communications Director Dan Bartlett, were basically saying, dude, leave it alone. Chill out, man. You're going nuts. It'll just give him another platform. Yeah, what are you thinking there, Dan?
Well, you're absolutely right, Mark. There's this quote at the end of one of the articles from Mary Matlin, who's also in that same circle, part of the White House Iraq group. She said, you know, Cheney and Scooter play chess on several different levels. That's how their minds work. It's not about what's right in front of him. They look at things in the sweep of history. And then she says, the Wilson thing was almost mosquito-esque.
Well, what's interesting about the relationship between Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney is that even when you look at Brent Scowcroft, who was the National Security Advisor for George Bush the first, and no friend of George Bush the second, and was a friend of Dick Cheney, is that he says in an article that will be out in the New Yorker. This is Brent Scowcroft. This is a conservative. This is a hawk. This is a guy that, you know, was in charge and knew what was going on in the first Gulf War. This is a guy that has educated intellectual opinions in terms of from the right, anyways, about how the Middle East should be dealt with. And he said, quote, the real anomaly in the administration is Cheney. I consider Cheney a good friend. I've known him for 30 years, but Dick Cheney, I don't know anymore. I don't think Dick Cheney is a neocon, but allied to the core of neocons is that bunch who thought we made a mistake in the first Gulf War, that we should have finished the job. This was another bunch who were traumatized by, and then there was another bunch who were traumatized by 9/11 and who thought the world's going to hell and we've got to show we're not going to take this and we've got to respond. And Afghanistan is okay, but it's not sufficient. Now, this is a guy that's basically saying that because Dick Cheney was influenced completely by the neocon agenda to the point where he had them in his office. And I think Scooter Libby, on some level, not unlike Rove runs Bush, was constantly pressing Cheney to ideologically align himself with this neocon agenda. And I don't know if I hope that Cheney goes down with the ship on this thing, and I hope they all get indicted. But Scooter Libby was clearly obsessed with Joe Wilson, and I thank God that Joe Wilson exists, because when asked to comment last week, Joe Wilson said about Libby's fixation on him, quote, what an abuse of power. What the hell are they doing using taxpayer-funded employees to root around and find information on me? This guy clearly won this battle in terms of making Scooter Libby look like an idiot. Now, we will hopefully get indicted, hopefully. We're going to talk to our guy David Poland about movies in a few minutes. We're going to talk to you a little bit about a poll that came out of Britain. The Ministry of Defense did a poll of Iraqis on the ground, and just it'll really shed some light into what they're thinking and how the winning of the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people is going. So stick around for that. It's 17 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. He's at a wedding somewhere in the country. He'll tell us where.
Asheville, North Carolina.
There you go,
actually.
Asheville, North Carolina.
Home of one of our affiliates.
We have affiliates all over the place. You know, I just got an email from a guy. I can't let it go. You know, look, I was just out in San Francisco, and I had a great time. And, you know, I expressed a little bit of a bitterness about the fact that we are now running in real time from 3 to 6 in the morning at the affiliate out there. And Jerry Springer, who comes on in some of our markets after that, is now the morning show there after we had been the morning show for a good long time. And I expressed a little bitterness, a little resentment, because I liked being the morning show in San Francisco. I like our listeners in San Francisco, and we had a lot of fans that were disappointed. So I said, well, you know, why'd you pick Jerry? And the thing is, Jerry's a nice guy. I'm glad people like his show, and I'm happy that people are listening to Air America, but I want my spot back. And if that lacks humility, well, then so be it. I lack humility. If you think that we're not team players here at America, why don't you come take a tour of the studio? All right, so what's on your mind?
We are a morning show.
That's right.
Know?
That's
Jerry
right.
Jerry Springer is not a morning show.
Jerry Springer is a this is a time after morning.
It's it's a relaxing, you know, taking calls kind of show. Like, we are a morning show.
Well, this guy who wrote, you know, and granted, I understand that, you know, we're all part of the same cause and that he doesn't like our show. It's funny, he says, you know, you said that stuff about Jerry, and you know what? I don't listen to your show because you stink. You know, you lack humility. You talk too fast. You're talking for people that are too smart. That Jerry's important because he brings in people that are not as smart as us, or not as wonky as us, or what have you. He's a populist. I agree with all that. Just want my spot back in San Francisco, okay, pal?
He doesn't listen to us. How did he know you said something?
Yeah, right. We're all on the same team, but I just want to be a morning show in San Francisco. You got a problem with that? Okay, here we go. What are we talking about now? I'll take a listener feedback, but come on, man. You know, it's like we put together a funny show here. We're for people driving to work, my friend. All right. Here's what I wanted to talk about. A recent poll of the Rockies by the British. Are we going to talk about the magic bullet, Chris? Are you going to give us a testimonial on the magic bullet in a little while?
If you want, sure, man.
Why? Because I might buy one. You know, I enjoy to cook.
You can get it at Macy's. They have it on sale.
I want to order it off the television.
Well, if you order it off the television, you get two.
I get two magic bullets in a blender, I think.
Kalo, what happened to the other magic bullet you got?
Yeah. Where is it? Where's the other one? Oh, he didn't order it off the TV. He ordered it off to Macy's.
Yeah.
He bought it from Macy's because he couldn't wait. See, that's what it got him. He saw it on TV, and he's like, this isn't going to come quick enough because I got salsa to make. I've got mush to create out of everything.
I got a bowl of salsa to drink.
He looks at me. I walk in. He's like, yeah, I made three omelets. Like, he couldn't do that.
The best omelets,
dude. What do you mean you can't do that with a fork and what?
But you know what? I don't need to use utensils, dude.
Okay, so you're basically clean. So basically you're saying that you don't enjoy the process of cooking. You don't mind that all your food has the same consistency now because you buy the convenience of it.
It's a food processor.
What about...
God, this is food.
There's something about chopping that is zen-like. There's something about having a little control over the size of the dice, my friend. And don't give me the pulsing argument that you can pulse it. Because,
you can.
No, but it's not the same as cutting nice little squares.
Yes, it's easier.
No, it's not.
It's not annoying.
No, if you do onions, even if you pulse it's going to come out a mess.
Chopping onions is terrible.
Yeah, but it's not going to come out in nice cubes, and it's going to be mushy and liquidy.
It's not going to mush.
I've been through this, man.
Dude, wait. I'm going to bring in my magic bullet and put on a demo.
I'm riveted. Maybe you should go to one of those street fairs, you know, that they have here where they sell socks and corn, roasted corn, the roasted corn socks and sausage street fairs that happen all over the New York area. And you could just be Kalo and the magic bullet guy. You could put it, you give that guy with the knife that cuts everything a run for the money. Look, it'll cut a can and a tomato. Thank God, because I need to cut Coke cans at home all the time when I'm cooking.
It
here
happens.
We go. A secret military poll commissioned by senior... Is that Jim Earl just came in? I was just in San Francisco, Jim. People love you there. They do. I took some questions from the audience. They're like, they asked a little bit about Jim Earl, and I said, of course, you know Jim Earl from his days here in San Francisco with the comedy team Lankin Earl. There was silence.
Cricket.
But
cricket.
It's all right. But but they love you out there.
Do they
Jim.
Have any apartments for me out there?
But don't jump the gun. We're going to hang out until the hatchet comes down. A secret military poll... commissioned by senior officers from the British Ministry of Defense show that Iraqis are turning against the coalition. Like, that's a surprise, all right? The bottom line is it shows that if the objective was to nurture complete violent contempt for the West, we've done that. 45% of Iraqis believe attacks against British and American troops are justified. 82% are strongly opposed to the presence of coalition troops. Less than 1% of the population in Iraq believes coalition forces are responsible for any improvement in security. 67% of Iraqis feel less secure because of the occupation. 43%
of Iraqis believe conditions for peace and stability have worsened, and 72% do not have confidence in the multinational forces. And given the fact that Condoleezza Rice last week announced provincial reconstruction teams are her big solution. Can I translate that? Provincial reconstruction teams, translated death squads. All right. So it's 27 past the hour. We've got David Poland to talk about movies coming up. We've got our Slander Minute. We've got Jim Rohl is going to do one of his things today. It's 27 past Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Bags of cookies. There are bags of cookies here. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Dan Pashman, who went to a tailgating party, apparently had to bring every cookie that was left over. There's like a million cookies in there. I can't get away from it. Don't you understand, man? I'm not as young as you used to. I cannot control myself around cookies, and I don't hold them well. I can't hold my cookies.
My friend Stacy made them, and they're really good. And
you don't have to sell them to me now. I know they're good. I've just eaten 20 of them. And the problem that we're going to have now is how do we manage Mark's self-hatred for eating 20 cookies? That's going to be your problem. Do you understand?
I only got to make it through 90 more minutes, man.
No, you don't. I know that you're going to be here for another 2 hours, and I'm going to ride you about it. I'm going to ride you, Dan. See, because, you know what? I'm not going to put that off on you. I just got an email from a guy who's like, I like the time slot Morning Sedition has in San Francisco. I'm up in the middle of the night working out, and it's perfect. I tell you, there were people coming up to me like, I went to Muir Woods in San Francisco, which is you go out, it's outside of San Francisco up north. It's beautiful. You walk the redwoods and everything. Oh, guy cool. Comes up to me, he's like, Mark Maron. I'm like, yeah. He's like, I listen to your show every day. I'm like, really? In the middle of the night? He's like, I'm a tour bus driver. So we got tour bus drivers, we got workout nice. Compulsives, we got tweakers, we got bakers, and then we got people who are podcasting. Some guy came up to me, he's come up to me before, he's like, I wake up to listen. Like, you know what I mean? That's, he just looked at me with that face like, I wake up to listen. I'm sending you guys a present.
A reason right. To live.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Our next guest is the editor of Movie City News and has a column called The Hot Button Dimension. Morning Remembrance is coming up. I want you to get in the mindset for that to grieve and mourn a little bit. But our next guest is the editor of Movie City News and has a column called The Hot Button, which you can check out at thehotbutton.com. David Poland is on the phone from the West Coast this morning. Good morning, David.
Morning. I just happen to be working out.
Yeah, I know you're on the treadmill right now, right?
Yeah. So, drinking people's blood in the middle of the night.
Yeah, well, that's what we're here for. I'm here to help get people's heart rate up. So now I'm seeing coming attractions for this movie Jarhead. It's going to come out in a couple weeks. It looks compelling, is it?
It compelled me to leave the theater when it was over.
Yeah, at least it didn't compel you to leave in the middle.
It's actually fascinating. It's a movie about nothing happening, basically. It's a whole, you spend an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, watching these guys go through the process of actually not fighting a war. It's very exciting.
So you're saying that it's a little tedious, but because it gets hung up in the nuances of being a Marine, or what?
It doesn't really get hung up in the nuances of anything except for really pretty cinematography. So it's a mixed bag, but it's funny because I agreed not to say anything about the movie until Thursday, and I think I talked to your guys about it. But it's a terrible movie. Yeah.
Okay. Then Jake Gyllenhaal is in everything now. How long?
As I said to somebody, he had sex for a second time in this movie.
He did with a man
from behind and broke back and from in front and Jarhead.
Okay. So wait, are you saying that is there a homoerotic under theme?
He got screwed in Brokeback Mountain, literally.
Yeah.
This movie, just figuratively.
Okay. Okay. All right. I get it.
By being in it.
So now, did you? I know that we didn't plan to talk about it, but what's the pulse on that new Meryl Streep Uma Thurman thing?
It's really weird. People are
Prime.
Kind of scared of it. People seem to really like that trailer for the movie.
Yeah.
And I actually, for the first time I think ever in my entire life, saw a movie where a TV spot for it after 11 o'clock at night, where she talked about his penis.
Yeah.
But people are kind of scared that this movie is going to underperform. I get a sense that certainly women are going to like it and want to go, and guys are going to be a little scared of it. But
it's Meryl Streep. I mean, you can watch her eat, and it's kind of rewarding.
And Uma Thurman's hot.
Yeah, and Uma Thurman's
I think Uma Thurman's going to win the Academy Award this year.
You do?
So,
based on the trailer?
I think she's going to win it for the producers playing Ula. Singing and Dancing.
When's that film coming out?
That's coming out the 21st of December.
Oh, my God. How can it be as good as the original? I mean, Gene Wilder, man.
Well, nothing can really be as good as the original. That's one of the great movies of all time. But it'll be... Every time they show the movie, there is nothing but positive responses to it. They've had an extremely successful thing. And, in fact, they're showing it this week to exhibitors at a thing called Show East in Orlando. So the fact that they're showing it to all the distributors this early in the game is a pretty good indication that they know they have something that's really great.
You know, I talked to Cameron Crowe last week, and I didn't tell him what you said about his movie.
That's very kind of you.
I thought I was going to
I think he knows, Mark.
Yeah, I know. I think the word is out on that one.
Unfortunately, I think he got the word. Yeah, it was really brutal seeing that movie in Toronto.
He changed it, apparently. He said that the version he showed up there after audience response, you know, it sort of forced him to rejudge, and he had one in the can that was ready to release, and he changed the version that you saw.
He thought about 10 minutes of boredom. Found another 10 minutes somewhere else.
But you got it. Cameron's a nice guy, though, right? Am I right?
He's a brilliant guy. He's not only a nice guy, he's also a brilliant filmmaker, and I'm sure he'll recover. One thing about, I saw the picture again in the shorter version.
Yeah.
Because I'm a glutton for punishment. But, you know, I do think that there's more of a sense of what his skill as a filmmaker is. However, the movie's still pretty bad.
All right, so now let's talk about this All the King's Men, which is based on a book about...
about George Bush.
It's about George Bush in Louisiana. Yeah. It's a Robert Penn Warren book, isn't it?
It is a great Robert Penn Warren book based on the real Huey Newton.
Yeah.
Who I always want to call Huey Lewis in the news, but I don't.
But it's Huey Long, not Huey Newton.
Yeah.
Right.
So see, we're all going through the whole process.
But, yeah. So we have to go through Huey Newton, Huey Lewis in the news, and then get to Huey Long, which is...
Baby Huey.
All right, so now, wait. It's got Sean Penn, Anthony Hopkins, Jude Law, and they've stifled the release of it for political reasons?
No, they didn't stifle it for political reasons. It may turn out to be more significant next year, but the political opportunity, I think, for George Bush to take the hit that people would actually... analogize this movie, which is, you know, based on a real person from the 40s and 50s, to George Bush now was a significant possibility, the way the movie was laid out, and the fact it was Louisiana. And now we're going to have to wait till another year, essentially, for the picture to come out.
Right.
So the opportunity for George Bush to take another big hit has kind of been eliminated by this movie. It's going to be a very apolitical season at the box office.
Completely. Did you see that movie? We had the guys in here last week. Did you see The Enemy Within?
I did not see The Enemy Within.
You should go see it, man.
Really?
I don't know if you can get hold of it. I'll send you a copy if you want. It's about the terrorist cell in New York. It's a very interesting movie about the different types of Muslim attitudes, and, you know, from that first person point of view, which we've never seen before. The War Within. I'm sorry, it's called.
Yeah, there's a great movie out there now, also called Paradise Now, which is about.
What is it? Yeah, you know, someone recommended that to me when I was in San Francisco. They're like, you got to see it. What is that about?
Essentially, it is the story of two young men who are pals, who are Palestinians, who kind of go through their day, and then all of a sudden they're called up to be suicide bombers.
Yeah.
And it's basically an honest representation of it, which has both the good and the bad. Well, I guess there's nothing really good about killing yourself, but or blowing
or other people up.
the idea is that they're human beings, ultimately, and that
right.
One of them is completely fervent about it, and one of them is kind of, once he actually has to do it, has a different perspective.
Right.
It's a fascinating movie. It's some people consider it anti-Israeli, some people consider them anti-Palestinian, and the fact that people are angry on both sides usually means something good is happening in a movie.
Well, yeah, it's provocative.
Yes, but it's also, it feels real. It doesn't feel forced, and it doesn't feel like a polemic. It feels like a really... you know, what human beings go through when considering something like that.
That's a lot of what The War Within is about, too. I'm going to have to go see that.
Really good movies about war right now. It's funny, there's a movie called Gunner Palace, which is now available on DVD, that 2 minutes of Gunner Palace is worth the whole 2 hours of Jarhead.
Yeah, Gunner Palace is great. We talked to those guys. I saw that film. I really enjoyed that. I thought it was a very effective and interesting documentary about being on the ground in Iraq.
Yes, and it's, I mean, there's time, even if you get past the Iraq part and just look at the way people live in war, they're living in Uday Hussein's summer palace.
Yeah.
And just the way they hang out there and the pressure outside and in is very human and very real, whereas Jarhead is a little bit stylized and almost fanciful about it.
Yeah, I would think that if they had Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, in any platoon, they'd find it annoying. but just by virtue of the way he is, I'm not saying he's a bad actor. So
yeah,
now,
it's mostly his eye makeup, actually.
Yeah, something. There's just something droopy and annoying about him. What do you make of the Weatherman? Any buzz on that? Did you see it? Do you know?
The Weatherman is kind of a car wreck that Paramount actually had in the can for over a year.
Oh.
And unfortunately, they've kind of gone with this very interesting ad campaign, trying to figure out. Somebody's going to show up to go see it, but it's basically a movie they had to put on the shelf and couldn't figure out how to sell
it. I'll tell you, despite whatever mistakes that guy makes in his career, I still like him.
Nick Cage?
Yeah. I do. Do you?
He's an interesting actor. He's a very, very strange man.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting actor. He's in Ghost Rider. That's his next big movie.
Okay.
Where he's playing a guy who's basically a skull on wheels.
A skull on wheels?
He's a ghost who drives around with a motorcycle jacket, and his head is a skull, a flaming skull.
Oh, my God.
And that's
it's a comic book. Okay, it's a comic book. Sorry.
Character.
See, again, I'm out of the loop. Where do people find the time? Before we go, David, do I need to get a video iPod?
I think you can wait on the video iPod.
Okay. Is that going to
happen? Never buy anything when it first comes out.
Yeah, no kidding.
But the thing that's really interesting is, and I don't know that you can actually do this yet, $2 to watch Desperate Housewives seems like a very bad idea. Or music videos or whatever. You can buy the entire Michael Jackson music video collection for your video iPod.
Yeah.
But I think there will be a time a little further down the road where you get, if you buy an album, you'll get the music videos also.
Now, but what the hell, how can you watch it? To what end is it to watch it on a little 2x2 screen? Can you plug the video iPod into the TV and make it big?
You can, but the quality of it is not going to be the same as watching a DVD, so it's a mixed bag. The other thing, though, is there's enough space on this machine when it gets to be 60 gigs now that you can actually could carry full-length proper movies on it. They haven't figured out. They know how to do it, but they haven't wanted to do it yet.
Yeah, but they're still 2x2, right?
You couldn't even watch those if you wanted to. If you put a regular movie on there, just use it as storage, you wouldn't be able to watch it.
It's amazing that you can watch movies in miniature with amazing sound.
Yeah, and you can actually drive your car and crash into things while you're watching Michael Jackson dance.
Oh, this is perfect. What a world we're living in. Who said it's not corrupt and like Rome? Look, David.
Well, you can watch Rome on it and then really crash into things.
Then that's like it. That's it. That's the whole circular motion of it. The metaphor, and I don't even know how to explain it, but I think it's a good way to end.
Oh, well, there you go.
David Poland, editor, Movie City News. Thanks. Great talking to you.
Have a good one.
All right. Take it easy. You can go to Movie City News or the hotbutton.com is where you can see David's work. He's good to talk to about movies. We're going to come back with the morning remembrance, so you might want to stay tuned for that because it's important to mourn and grieve properly on a week-to-week basis. 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, it's 50 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. We're going to get the latest on the leak investigation in just a few minutes. We're going to also be, can you guess who the New York Times endorsed for mayor of New York? Can you guess? I'll tell you in a second. How do you like that? That's what you call teasing in the business. Morning Sedition will return to O'Neill's Restaurant for another live broadcast next Thursday. It's a different day. Usually we do Friday. That's November 3rd. O'Neill's won us over with free bagels and lox. And, we had all kinds of great stuff the last time. Even if you come, you get your own basket of muffins and rolls. This time, who knows what happened. But we're going to have Lisa Lampanelli, which should make a lot of you angry. She's a comedian. And we'll have Vanity Fair's James Wolcott, a regular guest. So that's O'Neill's next week, Thursday, November 3rd. It's on West 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. You can always email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. Look forward to the emails. Sometimes I've been checking them on the air. It's a new thing I do. I found a free moment where I can actually say, hey, look, here's an email I'd like to read because it aggravates me. Or, hey, this is nice what this person said. What do you want? Okay, here we go. Unfortunately, it's that time of week, folks, when we hear Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on.
Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Ooh.
Oh, man. You okay?
Yeah. Hey, it's Monday. Oh.
Man, you got allergies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Allergies.
Let's just get allergies.
All right. Ted. Ted Pishak, director of educational films.
Mm.
Ted Pishak, whose educational shorts on dating and personal hygiene taught a whole generation of school children how to become the laughing stock of their neighborhood, died last week after getting run over by Mr. Bungle.
Mr. Bungle.
Mr. Bungle.
Yeah. Who is that?
Mr. Bungle, you don't want to do what Mr. Bungle does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was this a regional thing? Because I didn't...
No, yes. Will you just let me get on with this?
All right, go ahead.
You're going to get a lot of emails about Mr. Bungle.
Okay.
Pishak made countless films, including one geared towards school kids called How Billy Keeps Clean, and another geared towards employees of Hughes Aircraft called How It's Impossible to Ever Get Clean, no matter how long you wash and wash and wash and wash your hands. Store your urine in jars.
What is that?
It's Hughes.
Yeah,
an Howard
okay.
Hughes reference. Oh, I mean, keep up. These aren't that hard to get.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm a little upset now.
Ted leaves behind his sons Gary and Skip, two men who grew up learning the hard way that your emotions can be your own greatest enemy and that pleasant, unemotional conversation can help with the digestion.
Oh, man. You know who's going to write us? His kids. All right, go ahead with your heartless sketch.
Gordon Lee, child star in The Little Rascals.
Yeah, oh.
Gordon Lee, the chubby child actor who played Spanky McFarlane's little brother Porky in The Little Rascals comedies, died this week, thankfully before Robert Blake had a chance to kill him.
So that makes Robert like the last one alive.
Yeah. Lee, who became famous for appearing in more than 40 of the Our Gang shorts that were later syndicated for decades on TV, literally earned hundreds of dollars. Little Rascals, you know, this is something Riley would be interested in.
He's not here yet. You probably miss him, too, because you guys have that thing that you do.
I know.
You all right? Maybe you should blow your nose.
Yeah, hey, thanks a lot.
That
hasn't
happened.
Tissue. Here's a tissue.
Oh, that's good. Thanks. You feel better?
Yeah, it's not as funny as the first time I did it.
I like when you blow your nose.
The Little Rascals series is notable for being one of the first movie series where the African-American kid was portrayed with stereotypes as equally as disturbing as the sweaty fat boy, the deformed frog-voiced kid, and the slutty blonde girl. In many of their comedies, Porky and Buckwheat would team up against the older boys like Alfalfa. Interesting note, just 20 years later, Fate and a slug from a .45 would team up against Alfalfa's stomach.
Oh, man.
He was shot in the stomach.
Yeah, I get it. We're going.
Among the films Lee appeared in were 1936's The Awful Tooth, 1937's Board of Education, and 1938's That Hobo Touched Me Again.
Oh, was that an educational film?
No, it's not. Well, it could be.
Yeah. All right.
Family members are consoling themselves with the thought that right now, Lee's up in heaven lending Alfalfa some money for hooch.
Oh, man. This is good. This is a karmic gift that you're giving the world.
You know, I have one more.
Go ahead.
Lee, whose character originated the catchphrase, O-tay, requested his remains be teammated. All right, I couldn't come up with any decent jokes for O.T.
Was it? I thought that was Buckwheat's.
No, he came up with it.
And Buckwheat stole it?
Yeah, he stole it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah. So, you're all right, man?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
how about that Anderson Cooper, huh?
What the hell is that? He's on TV just like outside with wind and rain pelting him going, it's really raining.
Miles O'Brien doing the same thing. These guys are going to get an Oscar.
Do they give Oscars for news?
For that, yeah. Just
a basic cable Oscar?
Yeah, in and out in the rain and the 100-mile one.
Well, it's great to see you. Let me tell people right now what happened. The New York, do you want to end it? Do you want to do a button on that?
This week's Morning Remembrance. Till next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, I got something in my eye.
Oh, he's changing the tag phrase. It's going down. Hey, the New York Times, the liberal newspaper, folks, has come out endorsing Michael Bloomberg for mayor here in New York City. Not just endorsing, but basically saying that despite his lack of charisma in comparison to Giuliani and Ed Koch, he's been better at governing the city. They credit him with overseeing the final phase of pulling the city out of the nasty, broken, but gritty and exciting past into this well-operating machine. I don't know about that. We're going to have to get Riley to speculate on that tomorrow. But coming up, we've got we'll give you the new news on the leak. It's 57 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is out today. He's at a wedding down in North Carolina. He'll be back tomorrow. Hey, folks, we're trying to get somebody on the phone from Florida, but apparently it's going to be difficult. Man, I feel bad for Florida. Hurricane William made landfall at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time this morning near Cape Romano, Florida, 22 miles south of Naples. The Category 3 storm brought 125-mile-per-hour winds and a storm surge potentially as high as 18 feet. It's now moving northeast across Florida at about 23 miles per hour. More than 22,000 people, my friends, are in shelters across the state. But in low-lying Florida Keys, not even 10% of the people down there evacuated. They're just going to hunker down and buckle in and board it up and ride it out. Up to 10 inches of rain and tornadoes are forecast for parts of central and southern Florida. Mom, give me a call. Let me know how you're doing. Yeah, we were supposed to have a guest. We were going to call Larissa Alexandrovna, who is the a writer for Raw Story. She's a managing editor down there. She always gets us good leak information, but she is in Florida. And if there's any way to judge by looking at Anderson Cooper on CNN, it must be really rainy and windy. It's so funny walking into the back studio there and seeing him on TV just blowing around. Hey, what is that news reporting? It's like a joke, isn't it? He's out there interviewing people saying, wow, it's really raining.
I mean, are we supposed to judge the ferocity of the storm by, like, how much his jacket puffs out?
I thought the funniest thing was one time he was out there, and a guy actually rode out on a bike. rode out on a bike and said, hey, dude, I just saw you come out and say hi. I was in the house right over there, and I saw you're outside. I'm like, oh, my God, it's right outside my house. So the guy rode in the bike, and I thought to myself, I was like, Anderson, why don't you just get on the bike and go back home with him
right. And
watch the blank space where you were, because that's about his event. That was the best television. That was the best part of that coverage. Hey, guys, the White House is intending to pursue a strategy of attacking any criminal charges that are handed down by the federal prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald. And that's going to happen this week, all right? We're hearing things that the indictments are coming down. There's definitely going to be indictments. We don't know how many indictments. We don't know what they are for, but there's definitely going to be indictments. And the White House is trying to prepare by, of course, getting ready to slander and beat up on people. Now, you got to understand that right now in the White House, Bush is freaking out a little bit. Okay. He's panicky. He's frustrated, if you look at it, he's got multiple indictments maybe raining down on his inner circle. There's anti-war sentiment in the country that is raising. His poll numbers are down. The Katrina response, opened a sort of door to the incompetency of the administration that many people had not even realized before. We're approaching 2,000 soldiers killed in Iraq, and that could happen, any day now, sadly. And apparently, Bush is frustrated. He's angry. He's bitter. He's losing it. And I say good. I say let's keep gut punching the guy. The fact that Bush may lose his symbiotic twin and brain, Karl Rove, has got the president very squirrely. Apparently, advisors and friends say that Bush is just emotionally just out of control all over the place. Sometimes he's cheerful. Sometimes he's freaking out. Sometimes he's melancholy. Sometimes he's running around spewing blame at Karl Rove, Andrew Card, Dick Cheney, snapping at staffers. He's gone on to change everyone's nickname to a-hole. It sounds like someone needs a meeting. That's what I'm saying. And dare I say, he sounds a little Nixon-y. And I said this earlier today, but I know a lot of you are just tuning in. I think the interesting thing about the fact that he is running around screaming about, Andrew Card's a part in this cover up. If he's screaming at Karl Rove, if he's screaming at Dick Cheney, this is interesting because it really means that what we're seeing here is we're seeing the inner sanctum running to protect. You got Scooter Libby, who is Dick Cheney's chief of staff, and all of this leak investigation really revolves around the White House Iraq group, but primarily it revolves around the office of the vice president. And if there's any indication that Bush has been completely out of control of his, even the guys who work down the hall from him, that this is it. I mean, it's interesting to say that they're insulating him, that he's been kept off, kept out of the loop on this. But you know what? I'm starting to believe that he really might have been. If he's running around the White House screaming about the fault of, you know, how could you have done this to me? You know, yelling at Karl Rove, yelling at Dick Cheney. How could you not have let me know what you guys were really up to? This is an amazing indication that this president has been completely, you know, ineffective in the fact that he has not been in charge. It was always an assumption that Dick Cheney was in charge. But now this, I think, reveals that that is absolutely the case.
You're absolutely right, Mark. You know, the article you're referring to in today's New York Daily News that talks about Bush kind of, you know, coming unhinged specifically says that, Bush has told associates that Cheney was overly involved in intelligence issues in the run up to the Iraq War. Now, how could Bush not have known that Cheney was overly involved? I mean, as removed as Bush was, I would have thought that he would have at least have known that Cheney was going over to Langley and pressuring those guys. But like you're saying, it sounds like he might not even have known that much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give him any credit, and I don't want to, you know, play into their game, but this has been an assumption we've had all along. And given that Dick Cheney is really operating one of the most secretive governments to ever exist in this country, there's no reason why he wouldn't have cut Bush out of the loop entirely. Now, in terms of what they're planning to do, I just I want to give you guys a little fuel out there, a little help in terms of some of you already know how to do this, but you know, when they start coming at federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, they are going to accuse Fitzgerald as being overzealous. You know, when these indictments come down, when and if and what they are going to say things that the crimes are minimal and that that they are just really politics or strategy. This is, of course, the very popular criminalization of politics frame. They are going to try to minimize and dismiss any indictments of criminal activity. The big one is that they're going to accuse Fitzgerald of not being able to indict on a crime, so he indicted on not having a crime to indict. Now, this is crap. All right, if the indictments come down for perjury or conspiracy, if they come down and they have not been directly in relation to the leaking of a covert operative in the CIA's name, that doesn't make a difference. You can't let these bastards rationalize this. A crime is a crime. All right. First off, we'll know in the next couple of days, you know, what they exactly are in terms of the indictment. Second of all, it's just the bottom line is perjury is still a crime. And these are arguments you can win, folks. Okay, because the thing is that one of the things that they say is that Patrick Fitzgerald only had the authority to investigate the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, which is crap. All right, Patrick, if you get any right-wing people in your office who say Patrick Fitzgerald has exceeded his authority, it's a lie. All right, Fitzgerald's investigation didn't actually have any limitations. Okay, in a letter from an assistant or a deputy attorney general, Comey?
James Comey.
James,
yes.
Comey. He basically said, quote, "I hereby delegate to you all authority of the Attorney General with respect to the Department's investigation of the alleged unauthorized disclosure of the CIA employee's identity." But that, it's not limited to that. You know, he was able to investigate, you know, in that letter, he was able to investigate anything that happened outside of that. If there is a cover-up, that's a crime. Even if a cover-up is successful, even if these guys created some sort of chaotic cover-up, if they perjured themselves, if there was evidence of conspiracy, that is still a crime, and they should not be dismissed from that.
That's now, right, Mark. And, you know, I just want to add to buttress what you're saying. You know, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Republican senator of Texas, was on Meet the Press yesterday, and she started testing out this new frame that you're discussing here, and she said she hoped, quote, that if there is going to be an indictment that says something happened, that it is an indictment on a crime and not some perjury technicality.
Right.
Perjury is a crime.
Yeah, period. Okay. Yeah. Leaking the name of a CIA operative is no big deal. This is another thing that they say, that, you know, everyone knew that she was a CIA operative. It's not a big deal. The bottom line is exposing an undercover CIA agent it's not an ordinary leak. All right. In a 1999 speech to the CIA, George H.W. Bush
said he had, quote, nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust of exposing the name of our sources. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors. And these are the most insidious of traitors who are right within his son's own administration. And the bottom line is Ms. Plame was a specialist in a non-conventional weapons who worked overseas. She had non-official cover and was what in the CIA parlance is called a knock. Okay, this is the most difficult kind of false identity for the agency to create. I think it's important that we keep our eye on the prize in that the sense is that these guys really compromised national security. The bottom line is that Cheney and his neocon cohorts put the White House Iraq group together. This is like Andrew Card, Karl Rove, you know, Dick Cheney, Mary Matlin. All they put them together to dupe the American people with skewed intelligence into going into a war that was based on lies and has made the world a more dangerous place and killed almost 2,000 American soldiers and thousands of Iraqi civilians. The crime is compromising national security by leaking the name of a covert agent as a reprisal against someone exposing the lies they were trying to sell the American people to go into war. All right, that war was certainly unnecessary, according to Brent Scowcroft, who was a national security advisor for Bush 1, according to, you know, Larry Wilkinson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff, that the foreign policy in this country was hijacked by this cabal, this neocon death cult. It's just, and they're not going to stop either. Now, when we come back here in just a second, I want to continue talking about that a little bit, but I also want to Martha Wainwright's going to be here in a few minutes, and we're going to have Slander Minute in a few minutes. And I'm looking forward to hearing her sing because I like the way she sings. She sings pretty, so hang out for that. 16 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, who is not here. He's going to be back tomorrow. He's at a wedding down in Asheville, North Carolina. Good morning, Asheville. Maybe he didn't stop by the affiliate, did he, Riley? No, he's not going to do that. I am Mark Maron, of course, and you are listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And you know, as we know, by the way, Martha Wainwright will be out here shortly to sing for us. So I'm very excited about that. I saw her once years ago with her brother Rufus at, I believe, a record release party. And I thought then, does this woman have CDs out? And she didn't. And then when I saw her CD is coming out, this is her debut CD, I was very excited to get her on the show. As we know, folks, Saddam Hussein went on trial last week for crimes against humanity. He also scuffled with the guards, and he wouldn't recognize the authority of the court. It's a good story, but we thought we could improve on it, maybe tweak it a little on today's Morning Sedition Slander Minute. And now, here's our slander correspondent, Ted Fields. Ted, really, this time, do you have any slander for this story? Because you haven't really excelled on this whole
thing. Mark, yet. I have real slander this time. All right, Saddam Hussein, the former president of Iraq, stole at least $1,000 from his government's budget.
That's it? That's what you got? He stole $1,000.
At least $1,000. That figure's rounded off.
But, Ted, compared to what we already heard about Saddam Hussein, this doesn't sound like anything.
Yeah? Well, here's some real libel for you.
All right.
I have it on good authority that Saddam Hussein killed a guy.
Come on, Ted. I have it on good authority that he killed like a million guys. Why is this libelous?
Because I'm not absolutely positive he killed this particular guy.
All right, but if he's already killed a million guys, one more guy won't make his reputation any worse.
Come on, I'm just trying to make it into this business, you know?
All right. Just take it easy.
You have any idea how hard it is to stand out as a lying incompetent in journalism? The competition is unbelievable.
Okay, all right, I appreciate that.
No, you don't. A couple of years ago, I tried making up lies about Saddam Hussein so America would invade Iraq. Judith Miller in the New York Times totally scooped me.
Wow, it's tough.
Any falsehood I had, she'd come up with something bigger. I can't take the competition, Mark.
No.
If Scooter Libby wanted to smear Joseph Wilson, he could have called me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even have outed Valerie Plamath from the CIA. I'd have said Joe Wilson had a hump. Come on, you gonna believe a guy with a hump?
Yeah, I know. Okay, all right, buddy. This has been Morning Sedition Slander Minute with Schwander correspondent Ted Field.
Man, the deal Armstrong Williams got. That is my dream.
Oh, man. Just keep trying, Ted. Oh, he's going to cry now. It'll be okay, buddy. Let me ask you. You're all right?
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
I'm fine.
Why don't you go back to the drawing board on that one? All right. We're going to have Martha Wainwright out here in a second. Hey, do you, dig this. How about this? How about this one? How about this? NASA is planning to return astronauts to the moon by 2018 and later to Mars. A trip to Mars could last at least 30 months, carry 6 to 8 people up into space with it. NASA's concerned about having that many people in a mixed crew up there for that long in terms of intense crew relationships, i.e. people hooking up and all the trouble that brings. All right. NASA's worried about emotions, about possible violence that could happen when people get all up into each other in a confined environment. It's harder. And there's a lot of problems up there in terms of sex. But the thing is, if they're really concerned about this, I see there's a future for maybe we could have real world space. You know, maybe there's options. I don't know. I understand how there could be problems in space in terms of having sex. It doesn't seem like you could get a good, you know, leverage going. Am I wrong?
I mean, I was flipping around and I ended up on one of those crappy like WB sci-fi shows like Babylon 5.
Yeah.
And these two people started having sex in space, and they actually were, like, floating and rotating around in air, in the bedroom, naked, compressed into each other.
Well, that sounds like an interesting thing, to float and have sex, but I still don't think you could get the momentum that you would enjoy. Yeah, and also,
you would have to hold on to something.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I don't even like having sex in water. You know, I'm not one of those, you know, have sex in the pool kind of people, because it's no good. There's not enough.
As I understand, it's not good for the woman, but I have no problem with it myself.
Well, I'm sure you wouldn't have any problem having sex anywhere. Am I wrong with that?
No.
No, I'm serious. Tell me one place that you would not have sex.
Mom's bed, in front of my dad.
In front of your dad? And how did you go right from that to the other? How did you just go right from the other?
You told me to name some.
Yeah, I know, but why that sequence of events? Why my mom's bed in front of my... That's creepy, man. I'm glad you're in therapy now, because you got real problems. Oh, my God. Right from my mom's bed in front of my dad. I mean, what if I were to make... If that were a mathematical equation, I would say you have a severe Oedipal complex.
Okay.
All right. Now, there are other people actually discussing whether or not they should choose astronauts for missions that have a diminished sex drive. But some people say that it might actually be good to have them having sex and burning off some steam up there. I don't know. I don't know where I fall on this, but it's an interesting topic of discussion, kind of, isn't it? It's not really manifesting itself into a tremendous topic for discussion.
I just picture like, you know, one of the astronauts, you know, getting in a fight with one of the astronaut couples gets in a fight. The guy ends up outside on the moon and he's locked out of the space shuttle.
Cops in space.
Right, his girlfriend.
Some guy going, "No, man, the bitch is guilty of it." You know, they have to fly
the
up
Martian
and pull him off.
Show up,
floating around.
I wonder.
Can't throw stuff in space. It's very disappointing. It's very frustrating.
The guy's in a space wife beater.
Just like, "No, the hell with you." And he just throws things and goes, floats away. What were you going to say, Kayla?
I wonder if they masturbate in space.
Oh, because now we have to deal with that. We have a person coming on to play guitar who's a nice.
How do you clean it up?
Oh, we got to do that? No. We got to do that? Oh, my God. People are checking what station they're on. It would be messy, though. It's 27 past the hour. Martha Wainwright, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to come into this. She's going to come sing a song for us into the boys' club. All right. We'll listen to her sing in a second. Listening to Morning's Edition is 27 past.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here. I keep wanting to say with Mark Riley, but he's not here. I'm looking over at an empty chair where Riley sits. He's on his way back home from North Carolina, where he went to a wedding. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. That sound you hear is our next guest. It is from her debut CD, Martha Wainwright. It is in stores now. She'll be performing at the Bowery Ballroom here in New York tomorrow night. We'll be giving away some tickets in a minute, so stay tuned for that. But right now, Martha Wainwright is here in the studio with me. Good morning, Martha.
Hi.
I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
I've been wondering where you've been. It's a weird story because a friend of mine, I believe,
used to manage your brother. So I ended up at this record release party. It must have been years ago. And you sang with him. And I'm like, wow, she's the one that should be singing by herself right now. And then all of a sudden, like, I was very, you know, impressed with your voice. And then I saw your CD in a magazine. I told my booker, I have to have her on the show.
Do you
remember that?
I don't know what record it would have been, but...
It was probably the first one that was big.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Right?
You know, yeah, well, I've had a sort of very odd little underground career for that whole time. So only if you're basically sort of practically psychic would you have known that I existed.
Yeah.
It was not in a very, you know.
You weren't out there in the world in a big way.
No, I wasn't. And
you were secret.
I was secret, and I also, you know, I was on the road with my brother Rufus as his backup singer for a long time, and there was just I was hanging out,
yeah,
and getting my chops together. I don't know what I was doing.
Sure, sure. Well, I know there are people, I talk to people who are fans, viewers. There's a woman who works here who's like, oh my God, I love her. And this is your first record, so that the only way they would have known about you is by following you just in the clubs?
Yeah, and I've made these EPs over the years. I've always gone into the studio and recorded and created these strange little 5-6 song discs that are now worth hundreds of dollars on eBay.
Is that true?
And I have a box at home, but I don't know what I'm going to do.
Is that really true? It's $100 worth of...
The first one's up is worth $100.
So now your whole family is so musical. Did I just see your dad in a movie? Did he play a minister or something?
Yeah, well, I think he's in Elizabethtown.
Oh, is that what it was? Oh, I saw him in Coming Attractions for Elizabethtown.
Right. He was in Big Fish and Elizabethtown. I haven't seen Elizabethtown. I was just at a family reunion last night, and everyone said he's fantastic in it, which I believe.
You were at a Wainwright family reunion?
Well, it was it was my aunt's birthday.
Oh,
my dad wasn't there, but, you know, they were all singing his praises.
Like singing?
No, it's the side of the family that,
that doesn't sing.
Exactly.
And you were you also act as well? You were in the film?
No, I think you're thinking of The Aviator. I sang in The Aviator, but on camera.
Oh, that's right. You were in like a club scene, right?
Exactly.
I remember now. All right, because I was told that you were in it. Now, one other thing I want to ask you before you sing is that I guess you grew up in the folk music scene your entire life.
Yeah.
So you had these people hanging around your house, like every 5 minutes someone pulling a guitar out going, let's do this one.
Well, not really.
No? Okay.
No. I mean, by the time I was sort of aware of what's going on, my mom and my aunt, who are musicians, their name are Kate and Anna McGarrigle, they were getting really into like synthesizers, and they would be like down in the basement like creating these really weird synthesizer things. And my dad was on the road, you know. And so, I mean, you know, there was a certain amount of banjo playing going on, don't get me wrong, but I didn't partake that much. I was listening to Cyndi Lauper.
Okay, you know? All right. So you resisted it. You resisted the banjo.
I resisted it for a while, but then, you know, the folk got me in the end.
Now, did you you know Bob Dylan?
No. I knew this would come back to bite me in the ass. I don't think I could say. I don't know him.
Now, what come back? What was the rumor?
It wasn't a rumor. No, I had the opportunity of meeting Bob Dylan, which was through my mother, actually. I think she was really psyched that he knew some of her music, and he was a very kind gentleman, and I had, a kind of a low-cut situation going on when I met him, and... He then called me up at my home, you know, a week or so later.
And asked Bob.
Me. Exactly. I was on the other line, and I said, Bob who? And he said, Dylan, Bob Dylan. And I said, hold on a second, let me just get rid of the other line. Gotta go.
And what did he want?
He wanted to chat. He wanted to know. It was totally gentle and kind and really fun, and it was like a 20-minute conversation and one I'll never forget. And
wow.
Totally.
Just Bob Dylan talking for 20 minutes is such a rare thing.
And he was like, oh, I'm writing this book. And, you know, it was right before it came out. And I don't know. And, like, they want me to do this
Victoria's
Secret ad. And
oh, he asked you about that?
I don't know. I'm nervous about that. And
so
I got to do an ad. And I'm like, yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
So he was actually needy, and he needed some help, Bob Dylan.
We're on the radio. But I don't think Bob Dylan needs my help.
Oh, sure he does. I mean, you know, he's probably pretty isolated. He just wanted to talk to somebody to give him an outside.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very nice. It's sweet. So let's sing I Want to Hear Music. Can we do it?
Okay.
Yeah, all right. What song are you going to play?
Let me make sure I tell them again that you're going to be at the Bowery Ballroom here in New York City tomorrow night. For tickets, you can go to BoweryBallroom.com. For more on Martha's music and tour dates, you can go to MarthaWainwright.com. We're going to give away tickets in a minute. Which song are we going to play now?
Should we do Factory? Is that okay?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. These are not my people, I should never have come here. I know a place, I've seen a face. I'll take the coals from factory to factory. On these nights that I have been all alone, and through my window the moonlight she shone, and on my walls the fire she danced, playing out my very last chance to run, 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 run. Don't look back, you're moving fast. I know a place, I've seen a face. I'll take the coast from factory to factory, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Whoa, yeah. And there are millions and millions of people around, on my TV, my walking my streets, making sounds, and I can walk with them, I love them, I need them, but there are others I have known as poor soul sores exposed to the run of the mill, the destitute and the cold, and sores exposed to the blisters and shards where any kind of kindness is as far as the sun, the sun, the sun, the sun. Run, 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 run. I know a place, I've seen a face. I'll take the ghost from factory to factory, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Whoa. Run, run, run. Run, 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 run. Oh, run, run, run. These are not my people, I should never have come up. I know a place, I've seen a face. I'll take the coast from factory to factory, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Whoa, yeah. Whoa, yeah.
Yes. Oh, you got an audience in there. Martha Wainwright, unbelievable. It's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful record. It's her debut CD, Martha Wainwright, is in stores now. She will be playing at the Bowery Ballroom here in New York tomorrow night. For tickets, you can go to BoweryBallroom.com. For more on Martha's music and tour dates, you can go to MarthaWainwright.com. Now, what do you want to do, Dan? You want to give away tickets to callers?
That's right. We're going to take the 9th and 10th callers. We have two pairs of tickets right now, 866-303-2270. Give us a call. Win tickets to see Martha Wainwright.
So what's your, just before you go, what are your favorite records? Who influenced you the most?
I discovered a record of Leonard Cohen's when I was about 13, the record I'm Your Man came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just, you know, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. And it took me, you know, it took me listening to it every day, you know, for a couple of days to sort of really understand. And then that was like a total opening up of my mind, you know.
So Leonard Cohen blew your mind
Leonard
open.
Leonard Cohen blew my mind open. You know, I've always thought that I always thought that, you know, Chrissy Hynde had so much more nads than,
yeah,
you know, all,
sure,
like, all the guys in the band, like,
sure,
combined,
yeah,
on
definitely,
stage.
Definitely.
You know? So,
yeah,
it's like, that was really kind of influential in a really big way. And,
yeah.
And I think, you know, other big female singers like Edith Piaf,
oh, yeah,
and things like that. You know?
Well, cool. Well, I mean, I love the CD. I love your voice. And I'm glad that you're out from behind your brother, you know, in terms of having your own CD out.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Have a great show tomorrow night. We're going to give away a couple of tickets. Martha Wainwright has been our guest. Our number here is 866-303-2270 if you'd like to be the ninth caller to win tickets to see her tomorrow night at the Bowery Ballroom. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
It's 45 past the hour. We'll talk about, we got the liberal agenda coming up, and we've also, I want to talk to Chris more about the magic bullet. I know that seems trivial, but it's important. Stay with us, Air America Radio's Morning's Edition.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes, yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition coming in for landing on Monday. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is out. He'll be back tomorrow. He's at a wedding. You know, it's been quite a morning, my friends. Without Mark Riley here, I miss him. But I had a nice time. I love Martha Wainwright. I love her. I love her voice. I think she's a deep person. Folks, if you're in Florida, Mom, Hurricane Wilma made landfall at 6:30 a.m. Eastern Time this morning near Cape Romano, Florida, 22 miles south of Naples. A Category 3 storm brought 125 mile per hour winds and a storm surge potentially as high as 18 feet. It's now moving northeast across Florida at about 23 miles per hour. More than 22,000 people are in shelters across the state. But in the Keys, not even 10% of the Keys residents left. They're just like, we're hanging, man. We're strapped in. We're good. We've got some... got a keg. We got the boards up.
Margaritaville's queued
down
up.
Yet. Up to 10 inches of... All right. Up to 10 inches of rain and tornadoes are forecast for parts of central and southern southern Florida. Margaritaville. Yeah.
Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. Does he live down there?
Yes. That was a perfectly reasonable reference.
Oh, look at now. He's going to get defensive.
Yeah.
We've got the young Jewish man, Dan Pashman,
right
on the run. Yes. Oh, damn it. Yeah, I wonder if he left. He probably left. I want to say that if people are interested in, you know, federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, launched a website. It's not a fan site, and the timing is a little telling, maybe even encouraging. It doesn't mean he's getting ready to post some indictments, perhaps, starting tomorrow. Perhaps it does. It certainly doesn't suggest that he's saying, well, we got nothing. He's definitely got something, and he's apparently a spokesperson for Fitzgerald said that, don't get too excited. He basically said that it's a way to address the never-ending flow of questions people have about the plane leak case. And he said it's pretty bare bones, but there is some stuff there. There is some things, I guess, a lot of the questions were revolving around how broad he could throw his net, how much power he had, because there is a memo from James Comey, the then acting attorney general, establishing Fitzgerald as an independent special counsel with all the authority of the attorney general. With respect to the department's investigation into the alleged unauthorized disclosure of a CIA employee's identity. And there's a couple of documents there. And hopefully tomorrow or the next day, the indictments are going to come down. So they'll probably be up there. But we do have a link to it on morningsedition.com if you want to get hooked up to Patrick Fitzgerald's website. Also, another thing I'd like to talk about, there was an article I read today. Kayla's here in the studio with me because Trent's out there on the board. When are you leaving? When are you going?
Like November 11th.
Oh,
that guy needs a lot of training.
Really? Is that bad, huh?
It's not that bad. He just needs to
awful.
Know it.
Yeah. Trent, now what's your history in board operation? Do you have a resume that's impressive at all?
I do.
Yeah,
I could put it on the blog or, you know, forward it to
you.
Why don't you just tell me?
Right,
yeah. Where have you worked before?
I work in the Al Franken Show.
Here. Where's that?
That's here, actually.
Alfred, Trent, you used to work for me.
No, actually, Al Franken doesn't even know he exists.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, Trent.
Him. That's the interesting part.
All right. Well, so you worked on Al Franken. That's right. I remember seeing you over there. You
right, used to right.
Be, yeah, sure.
Before
and what
that
else?
At my college radio station. Been there for a while. So,
so that's so you're punk. How old are you?
I'm 23.
I like being surrounded by these young guns, man. I think
I'm
it's
punk.
The way to go.
And he has cats.
Punk.
And you have a cat?
Three.
Yeah, you have three cats as well?
And he smells like he has three cats.
Are they friendly?
Absolutely.
Yeah, mine are very touchy. You know, the great thing
out.
About
they
having...
Hang out.
Maybe they can teach them how to calm down. The great thing about having feral cats is they will never calm down. You know, all that energy that you like. Hey, when they were kittens, my cats never stop moving. They're freaked out constantly. It's a cat circus. And you know what they give me every morning when I wake up at 3:30 and start to do my work before I come to work? You know what they do? They all just one after the other poo. They're just like one after the other right when I get up before I even have my tea.
In your bed or something?
No, just right in the office where the litter box is, because I've had to keep them in my office. I feed them in my office, and I have the litter box in, because that
Dude,
was
move
where...
the litter box.
I know. Can I just do that?
You can just do that.
Can I? If I move it down the hall, will they figure out how to do it?
Well, my cats might. I don't know about yours.
Now, don't...
Sorry, I had to.
My cats are wild. They lived in the wild, and they hunted on their own before they were 2 months old.
Well, they can hunt down the litter box down the hall.
All right, buddy. Yeah, you and your pampered little, you know, tame cats, your lovey-dovey cats. Hey, look, I was going to talk about the clutter thing, but I'm not going to talk about
what
it now.
Thing?
It doesn't matter. We got
to do it.
No, I want to talk about the magic bullet. Now,
okay.
See, there's part of me that spites you and resents you for getting something that makes a mush out of everything, that almost pre-digests your food.
It's a food processor.
I have a food processor.
I don't.
Yeah, I know, but I have a big one. The little one sounds kind of interesting.
Yes, it's great. I mean, it was only $60, and I got a food processor,
but it's
so much more.
Yeah, but oh, my God, what are you selling the thing? It's so much more. What else is it?
I can make frozen daiquiris.
Yeah.
I can make sorbet.
Uh-huh.
I can make a nice frozen smoothie.
You can also make everything the same consistency. And where's the joy of cooking? What about, you know, dicing things?
I can still
things?
Cook. I just don't have to.
And you have a pan that is built to flip things?
Why this can't thing. Because you know what? I can't flip things.
You're
can
lazy.
You?
Yes, I can.
See,
I
how
can
do you do that? It's only a risk, right?
Well, you take a risk, and you... What is that? Is that the sound for the thing?
The liberal agenda.
No, but you, what you're doing is you're cutting out the process. You should learn how to flip in a regular pan and learn how to do it properly and learn how to dice and slice yourself. That's what cooks do. They don't use bullets, machines.
No,
all right, now it's... Now it's time for the liberal agenda. Here's the facts. All right, we got it. If ratings for the command one, if ratings for Commander in Chief continue to go up, have Hillary pick Gina Davis for a running mate. All right, two, have your daughter trick or treat as herself this Halloween, but call her a witch, just to illustrate that witches are no different than anyone else. Three, if you're gay, demand the right to join the military, and then, for God's sakes, whatever you do, don't join. Four, suggest a plan to prevent prison overcrowding after the rash of upcoming indictments. Just raise the fences around the White House and make it so they lock from the outside. All right. Five, get a copy of Tom DeLay's mugshot and use whatever means are necessary to wipe that smile off his face. Here's the phrase of the day. Just drop it into conversation. Commander-in-Chief with Gina Davis is the first woman president, is the number one new show of the season. Wake up, sheeple. She's got better numbers than George Bush. Of course she makes better decisions. And I'm including Cutthroat Island.
Oh, God.
Because that was that bad movie. You didn't laugh at any of these, and that's all right. You know what? Riley's coming back tomorrow. We got Amy Tan in studio tomorrow. We'll have the Liberal Confessional. And I'll be looking forward to getting up early and talking with you people again. Go whip something up in the magic bullet.
It
all looks the same. It makes mush out of things. I'm not going to sell it. All right, so that's it. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.